Welcome to Killer Women with your host, best-selling author, Danielle Girard. And now, Danielle's next killer woman.
Hello, and welcome to Killer Women Podcast, a proud member of the Authors on the Air global network with more than 4 million listeners. I am your host, suspense author Danielle Girard, and my guest today is Heather Gudenkauf. Heather is the New York Times best-selling author of 10 novels, including the Edgar-nominated The Weight of Silence and The Overnight Guest, which was an Amazon Best Book of the Year and described by Kirkus Reviews as masterful, terrible, and absolutely addicting, tense, taut, and terrifying. Her new thriller, Everyone Is Watching, was named to Goodreads' list of readers' most anticipated mysteries and thrillers of 2024. Heather lives in Iowa with her family and a very spoiled German short-haired pointer named Lolo. She enjoys spending time with her family, reading, swimming, and hiking. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's so fun. And Heather and I got to be a guest on Killer Author Club last week when we interviewed Mary Kubica. So if you missed that, go check it out over on Killer Author Club, because Heather, along with Kimberly Bell and Kara Ruta, do such a fun show. And they do it live, which, as I was telling Heather, I finished the episode like sweating and panting and needing a cocktail just to calm my nerves. So
it was so much fun. Thank you for joining us.
But I was so nervous. I'm clearly not meant to go live ever. So Heather, I devoured this book. I was a little behind my reading because I moved my daughter to Denver, and I devoured it like in one evening, stayed up until 1 a.m., which I think I'm still sort of paying the price of two nights ago. So tell our listeners about Everyone Is Watching.
Yeah, sure. So Everyone Is Watching is the story of five strangers who from all across the United States, all walks of life, who are invited to take part in a competition reality series. So they all leave their homes, their families, pack up and move to a isolated estate in Northern California and prepare to get ready for this game. But when they get there, they very quickly realize that they've been brought there for something very different. It's not what they expected, and long held secrets that they would prefer stay buried start to come out.
Yes, and it is from the get-go. So I want to talk about the character of Fern. So Fern is the assistant to the sort of the head of this cat, who is the head of this show, and you know, a difficult woman. Cat is difficult. And Fern is a sort of, she's been doing this job for a long time. She's sort of, she has a lack some confidence. And where did Fern come from? Like, so where do your characters come from? And maybe I should just back up and say sort of who emerged first, because there's all of these characters are very distinct with very sort of, you know, deep, dark secrets and ulterior motives. But, you know, I'm curious to know who developed first, and tell us where Fern came from, because she's such a spitfire. I loved her.
Yeah, well, I love Fern too. Fern wasn't the first character that emerged, but I knew that that she was going to be a big part of the story. And in fact, she did emerge to be really one of the leads, and the story just primarily revolves around her and her relationship with her boss, who is very difficult, and a past that she has that hasn't always been easy as well. And she's kind of thrust into this role, a different role for this reality show that she's not expecting either. And she gets a lot of surprises along the way as well. The first character who came to me, though, was Mare, who is the Iowa mom who has a very fragile child who's ill, and she's broke. She's on her own, and she needs money to help care for her child, to get her the medical care she needs, and she's desperate. And so she's like, I'm going to do this. I can take a couple weeks, and I'm going to go win this money and then go back to my family. But when she gets there, it's not what she signed up for.
No, it's not what, I mean, it's $10 million, right? So this is not just like, this is not like the $1 million winner. This is a huge, huge amount of money. But boy, like from the get-go, I mean, there are, everyone's like, well, what about the dangers of this or the dangers of that? And you signed a you signed the liability waiver. So they are, from, you know, and it really does. Mare is, I can see how Mare emerged first because her story is so compelling with, you know, her daughter has cystic fibrosis. The dad of the father of the children is, you know, not around and not helpful. And yeah, and you can imagine, I think it's such a universal pull for parents and really for anybody to know that like, what her kids, how her kids are depending on her and what a spot she's in. So, and the fun thing about this, and I'm not giving anything away, is that these people soon realize that they know each other in, you know, some of them know each other from past experiences in their lives. So how do you do this when you, cause everybody has a secret, everybody, you know, is hiding something. Do you braid this all out? This is what I always am so impressed by when people have sort of, literally there's a dozen secrets in here. There's six characters if you count Fern, right? There's five, you know, everybody's got at least one secret, sometimes two. And how are you, you know, are you plotting this whole thing out? How are you doing this, Heather?
No, I am a firm, or have been a firm pantser, where I have an idea and I run with it. And that was nearly impossible to do with this book because there are so many layers to it. And so I ran into so many brick walls, and it took me a really long time to write. Probably took the longest of any book I've written. And so I think I wrote and rewrote it three times. Characters came and went, the plot changed, the ending changed completely. Some characters who were in the forefront in the beginning, in the first drafts, fell to the back. And it was an adventure. And, you know, there was a lot of frustration, a lot of, can I finish this? Can I get it done? But in the end, I'm really, really happy. It's a fun book. It's a little different than what I've written before. But it is really fun. It was fun to write, and it's fun to see it finally go out into the world.
Yes, I'll bet. Yeah. I'll bet. Well, so I like the way you say I have been a firm pantser, as though perhaps now we're taking this down. Is there a way to change? I'm curious to know, because I'm also a firm pantser, and I'd love to hear that someday we could probably like plot a book out, outline a book.
Well, I don't know. I'm in the midst of it. I am working on my next one, and I was like, I'm going to plot this thing out from beginning to end, because as pantsers, I think there's a magic to it for us as well. Like, you know, things come, they emerge, and we surprise ourselves. But there's also a lot of unknowns and back roads that take us to where we want to go. And it's not always the most efficient way to write.
No.
And so I thought, I'm going to plot this next one out. And so I spent a couple months just plotting. And so really thinking it through, and gosh darn it, if the characters just don't do what they want anyway.
Yeah.
So
right.
I think I'm not a completely reformed pantser. But I think I'm for this book coming up, it's a combination of the two, which is helping me in many ways for me to stay focused and on this roadmap to where I want to go. But I think this probably happens for plotters too, that things surprise you, and you have to listen to those characters in your head because they want to do what they want to do.
I do think, like, to your point, and I don't know, because I've never been a plotter or an outliner, and I'm not suggesting that those books aren't, you know, fabulously creative, but for me, I do find if I sort of plan something, it really feels planned, versus I feel like if I let it happen organically. Now, but as you said, the road to an organic 90,000 words is usually like 160,000 words, because, you know, I go all the way down a road and realize, That isn't going to work, you know, so you sort of, so you're right. In terms of efficiency, I think, yeah, it is not efficient. So tell us about the process for this book, because, you know, obviously you've had huge success, lots of incredible books, lots of accolades. You had a gap, and was it because of the book? Was it the world, the pandemic? I think it's important for people to know that this job, we're here to celebrate the book and everything looks so hunky-dory, but as you said, there's a process that's really hard. So if you will you share a little bit of that?
Yeah, sure. So it was written partially during the pandemic. My previous book, The Overnight Guest, was also a pandemic book, as was the one before. And so schedules, timelines, all were kind of refigured in the publishing world because there were so many, there were shipping issues, there were production, I mean, just it affected everything. And so that was part of it. Part of it was for me, just the writing of the story, since it was different for me. That took me quite a bit longer to cut and for it all to come together. And then there's also the, you know, some, you know, personal piece. My dad was diagnosed with cancer during the writing of the book and entered into hospice care. And of course you want to be there for your family, and that took precedence. And so the writing just kind of was set aside. And I was able to spend, you know, a lot of really quality time with my family, which is to me the most important.
Of
But
course.
it you know, lots of roadblocks in and out with writing the story, but eventually, finally, it comes together. And I think as writers, we're always wondering, do I have another book in me? Can I do this? No matter how many times you do it, no matter, you know, the reviews or how well it does, you, I know for me, I'm always thinking, did I just use up all my creative energy? Is it
Was
gone?
that
And
it?
so there's, you know, there's a lot of unknowns with publishing and reliance on other people's, you know, everything, you know, the market, schedules, pandemics, everything.
And it is interesting. I mean, you know, I experienced this last year when I had a just, you know, I'm not going to have a book out this year because last year was also really a hard year. But it is interesting because I think it's, you know, of course, as writers, we also know you have to show up even on the hard days, right? You have to show up at the computer, but there are things that happen in life that just derail. And it's not the same as if you know, I don't think it's the same because I spent 10 years in finance too. And I don't think it's the same as that kind of job where you can really show up and sort of work through, you know, whatever else is going on in your life, at least for periods. I think there is something to writing where if you're going through something really emotional, like, you know, a sick parent or family member, that it really does just like it sort of takes the all that energy out of and doesn't it makes it impossible. I found that really, and here I was like, I wrote books with newborn babies and pregnant and you know and you know sick or whatever, but I mean not sick, but like you know with so my own version of a man cold, and I just could not. You know, I could not do it. So I think it's really interesting that that makes it even tougher, right? Because it takes some emotional piece of us.
It does. And you know, you're sitting with yourself and your laptop, and it's just you and what's in front of you, and it can be really hard to put that emotional block where you're blocking the whole world out, when writing really is a very emotional, writing fiction and writing in general is a very emotional artistic endeavor. And you know, I think that this always needs to be on the surface in our work, but it's so hard to tell other people's story when you're trying to figure out your own. And it can be challenging. So yeah, we have to sit down. I mean, that's a given. We do have to sit down. We have to, you know, schedule that time. But sometimes the world throws us curveballs.
And I do think, you know, I mean, I think I've had moments where I tried to force it, but I just think there's some little particle of magic that has to be sort of available. for, you know, inside you to make it work. So, so tell us about, you know, first of all, I was telling you before we got on air that I could absolutely see this as a movie, which is so fun.
Thank you.
So, I mean, and some of those obstacles, I'm not going to get into it because you're going to want to read the book, but I was like, oh my God, these, you know, this is like, it's got some survivor elements that I thought were super intense. So tell us about, you know, the process of, you know, what, like, you know, what did you, how do you do your writing in it when life is sort of normal? What's your sort of, I know, cause you're also really active with the Killer Author Club and a million other things. So how do you sort of partition your days? Is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah. Anyway, how do you sort of set yourself up?
Yeah. And I think it, for me, it varies for what part of the book I'm in, what part I'm working on. So like the brainstorming session, or like with the book I'm working on, the plotting, that looks very different than when I'm working, actually composing the book. So I often start with a notebook and I just brainstorm lots of ideas. I really think there's something to be said about that physical hand, pen to paper, for me anyway. And so I start there. And then when I'm ready to start writing, I don't like sitting behind my desk here. I like to take my laptop and go somewhere else, whether it be like a comfy couch or even outside. If the, you know, I'm in Iowa, so the weather is never predictable, but I like to get away from my desk because I feel like lots of times here I'm answering emails. I'm you know, it's a lot of busy, important, but busy stuff. And so I like to kind of remove myself from my desk, and, you know, that can take, well, for me now, like with this book, it's taking a long time to write. But so my writing there looks very different than when I'm, you know, doing my research too, which I do as I write. I don't research ahead of time. I just research as I go, for the most part, and write little notes to myself, you know, and say, well, ask about this. And
yes,
which can get you into trouble too when you have to go back and fix things. But that's how I do that. And then periodically, as I'm writing, like every 50 to 100 pages, I'll print it off, get away from the desk again, and go through very carefully to make sure I'm on the right track,
right,
and things are falling into place. So every iteration of the book or every phase is completely different, and it feels very different to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the amount of time I spend and is very different, because I don't know about you, but in the actual writing part of the day, composing, I only have so much bandwidth for that. And it might be 1,000 words, it might be 2,000 words, but I'm tired after that. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. It's exhausting. It's totally exhausting.
Yeah.
And especially when I think you're dealing with really like emotional things. So these are thrillers, you know, they're obviously, they're absolutely patrons, but there are some heavy, you know, themes in this book, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, there is, you know, themes of, well, obviously there's secrets everywhere, but there's themes about, you know, sort of things that have happened to women, you know, a fair number of those. And I find, you know, of course this is Killer Women, so we always talk about, you know, women issues and women things. And I do find it really, you know, a universal thing to hear about women's experiences in uncomfortable situations, which I think we can agree that all of these women, you know, are in uncomfortable situations, and each of them is sort of not as powerful as, you know, their counterparts, whether it's the, you know, Fern and her boss, or, you know, the men versus the women. And I sort of think, you know, do you set out to sort of tackle those issues? I mean, it's not, none of it is like, you know, you read those books where you're like, okay, they're trying to make a point about something here. And this is not that at all, which I think you do beautifully in all your books, you know, which is to weave in, you know, real things that happen to people, real tragedies, real struggles. But I wonder about sort of like, so when you, for instance, when Mare developed first, you know, are those issues, like, she's a single mom, right? She's the she's the person in charge. Are these things that sort of just come naturally from being a mom and a woman? Or are you sort of like thinking, like, you know, how does that happen for you, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I tend to write about women characters who are put in extreme situations. And you know, a lot of, I think we experience and, you know, feel a lot of the same emotion. Maybe we're not in the same situation as Fern, or as Wilford and Mayor. Like, Mayor's child has a life-threatening illness. Many years ago, my son had a life-threatening illness, and I was fortunate, you know, that my family unit is together through all that. But you'll do anything to protect your kids, you know, anything. And that makes you think about that. And, you know, fortunately, my son is doing great now. But I think I don't think I always start out intentionally infusing teeny little bits. And it's teeny because I live a very boring life, nothing like the characters in my books. But
thank God.
Thank God. I do infuse little teeny bits of, you know, my life into my books as well. And I don't know if it's kind of an exploration and, you know, of life in general, but, you know, it's what we see too. You know, what we write is a reflection of what we see in the world. And so I think I hope I highlight some of those issues organically through the book, but also the perseverance. And, you know, we don't always like the characters, and at least in this book, they're not always likable, mm-hmm. but in some ways they're relatable, I'd like to think. And we find we're rooting for them. And that's, you know, that's life. We're not all good. We're not all bad. We make mm-hmm. mistakes. We have, you know, mm-hmm. people have secrets. But to see the characters in this book kind of struggle with the mistakes they've made and the decisions they've made, and they're put in a situation that is literally life and death to get to the other side. So
Well, and I love what you said. I mean, they're, you know, even the most sort of despicable characters in the book have moments where you sort of feel, you know, and they feel real. They don't, you know, like you said, I think that is actually, I don't think there cannot be a character in a book who feels genuinely real, who doesn't have unlikable moments, because even the best of us, right, are at times pushed into a mm-hmm. corner very, you know, we will lash out. We are unlikable because, you know, we're protecting something that feels, you know, like you said, very important to us and the each of these characters. And I love that too, because I think the nuance of character is what makes them feel real to me, right? The sort of the moments when you're like, that was very ugly, and it also totally resonated with me, because of course, who hasn't been the ugly parent or the ugly, you know, I mean, just if it's pushed too hard, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I love what Fern does, and I'm not going to tell anybody what Fern does, but right at the get-go, Fern is pushed too hard, and she does a very unexpected thing. And it's what I love about it too is, Heather, even just knowing her for just a few pages, mm-hmm. when she does that thing, we absolutely know that that is not really, and that is not in her character. And it becomes this such a fun thing to watch from a character we hardly know. So you do such a beautiful, that's such a Thank beautiful you. Thing that you can know somebody well enough in just those first pages to be like, oh my God, what are you doing, girl? So anyways, right. And I mean, I really mean it. It had so many twists and turns. It's so unexpected. And I think, like you said, I can imagine how the end totally changed. I can imagine how things rearranged themselves as, you know, as you wrote. Now, what's the process with your editor? Because I also feel mm-hmm. like sometimes we can't see the way something could end up and be, you know, different until we're sort of way away from it. So is that helpful? Do you have somebody who works with you?
Oh, yes. Yes. So I have some early readers who are always very helpful. I have friends, family members who read the early things. And then my agent. And if I have a really close relationship with my editor, in the sense that we really talk a lot. It's really a collaboration, because me being a pantser, I get in the weeds sometimes. And she is, my editor is so good about, like you said, looking over everything and seeing the big picture, the things that I don't quite see, and the nuances of the characters, and, you know, some of the action as well, what what maybe needs to be looked at, expounded upon. But it's a great collaboration. It's never forced. It's never like, you must do this. It's all, what about, and have you thought about? And I think that is something I really need and appreciate in an editor.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that is, and it's something that, unpublished authors, really need to try to find in some, whether from a critique partner or an edit, a developmental editor, because I think it is a sort of priceless. It's invaluable to getting the book to where you need to be. So, and the fact that you have it with your editor is like, obviously what a gift.
Very fortunate. Yeah, it is
so fortunate. So all I can say, everyone, Heather, tell us where to find you online, give us a short little bit about Killer Author Club too, so we can make sure everybody knows.
Yeah, so Killer Author Club is a collaboration that I do with authors Kimberly Bell and Kara Ruta. We're all thriller writers, and our a few years ago, our books were coming out in the middle of the pandemic and everything had shut down. And we thought, let's do something fun with the three of us. And then we had so much fun. We thought, let's invite other thriller authors that we love and want to know more about, love their books. And it's 30 minutes of fast-paced fun. We talk all things Killing of the fictional variety. We have a cocktail, lots of giveaways. So you can find us at killerauthorclub.com and on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. And people can find me at heathergoodenkopf.com on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Sorry. Yeah, that's what, and so I know, right? I'm with you on that, sort of with the TikTok. That feels a little bit beyond my, I'm too old for that, I think maybe, but once you've read everyone is watching, go back and look at Heather's other books if you haven't, because really, Heather, you have such an incredible backlist, and I hope they make Everyone is Watching into a movie. I would love to see who plays all these fun characters. Yes, yeah. It'd be so fun. Of course, that's what we all dream of. Everybody, this was Heather Gudenkopf with Everyone is Watching. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Thank you.